Hi, this is Rachel.
And this is Christy.
And welcome back to Constant Chaos.
Hey, Christy.
Hey, Rachel. How are you?
Oh, you know, 1 year into COVID, homeschooling, I'm losing it.
Yeah, aren't we all? I don't know how you're doing with the little kids. I'm having a hard time with the teenagers.
It's pretty awful. Who would have thought a year in we'd still be doing this?
I don't know. I try not to think anymore. I think not thinking is better than thinking.
We are still doing some podcasts, and I think our episode today is really interesting. It's a topic that doesn't get talked enough about, and that's the siblings of kids with special needs.
Yeah, and they need their own team, and they need their own resources, especially when you have a house mixed with neurotypical and non-neurotypical kids. They could also be anywhere on the spectrum of disability, right? They could be physical, emotional, you know, you name it, educational. They could have all kinds of diagnoses that impact their situation, and supporting their siblings is so important because they don't know another life. They don't know another world. This is their world, and they need their own team.
Exactly. So we were so lucky to get Emily Hall from the Sibling Support Network. It's an amazing organization that she can talk so much more about that. So we will get started and welcome Emily. Hey, welcome back to Constant Chaos. It's Rachel and Christy. Today, we are really excited to talk to Emily Hall. That's how I say your name, right, Emily?
You nailed it.
With the Sibling Support Project. Because if you're like me and Christy, you have more neurotypical kids. And it can be a little challenging sometimes to know how to balance the two. And I know in my house, we, especially during COVID, have been having a really challenging time with one of the kids needing more support. And that is why we wanted to talk to Emily. So here we go. Emily, tell us about the Sibling Support Project and what you do.
Well, thanks so much, first of all, Rachel and Christy, for having me today. So I'm the lucky person who gets to be the director of the Sibling Support Project. And we are the first national organization in the U.S. dedicated entirely to supporting siblings of people with developmental health and mental health concerns. We're located just outside of Seattle, Washington, where we had some lovely snow a couple of weeks ago, which is really unusual for here, just like the rest of the country. It's such a weird winter. And we're part of Kindering, which is Washington State's largest early intervention provider. And we do our work with siblings. We work with siblings of all ages. And we do our work with siblings kind of in three different areas. One is through our books and publications. And we're really proud of our books because they're written not only for siblings, but largely by siblings of all ages. We have books for kids, for teenagers, for adults, and siblings have written and contributed to those books. We facilitate online groups for siblings. So we have three groups that currently live on Facebook. They're closed Facebook groups, and they're places where siblings of all ages can get information and a lot of peer support and a lot of validation, which is so important for siblings. We have SIB Teen for our adolescents, SIB 20, so just SIB 20 for our 20-something siblings, and SIB Net, which is our largest and longest standing group for adults. It's been around for as long as the internet, like back when everyone was on a listserv. Do you guys remember listserv? I remember listserv. I was on SIB Net when it was a listserv. And those are just really warm, reflective communities where siblings can, again, turn to each other to celebrate, to vent, to ask questions, and to really just share the sibling experience. So those groups are really amazing. And then probably what we're best known for are SIB Shops, which are workshops for kids. They are super fun, pedal to the metal events for school-age siblings, where kids can get together. First of all, realize they're not alone, because we, you know, we'll get into this, but we know from the research that the sibling experience really parallels the parent experience. And one of the ways that that happens is that siblings really need to connect with each other. Siblings really can benefit from connecting with other siblings who are kind of walking a similar path. And so we want to start that young. We want these kids to know that they're not the only kids who have brothers and sisters with special needs. And so
how young do you start the workshops?
So SIB Shops typically age 8. We do have SIB Shops, you know, across the country that are serving kids a little bit younger than that. And then we go right up through, you know, it used to be 8 to 13, and now SIB shops are really expanding to support teenagers as well. So so they're fun, first and foremost, and they also provide opportunities for kids to really talk about the ups and downs of having a sibling with special needs. And I use the term special needs a lot, which is not everyone's favorite term. It's a vastly imperfect term, but I do use it because it's a little bit of a shortcut. It saves a little time, so.
Exactly. Well, and I was going to say, so I met you when you came to Lafayette and came and did a presentation, and you asked for volunteers from the community to come in. And so our daughter was one of the volunteers that came in and was on a panel and talked to the audience about being a sibling of a, you know, non-neurotypical kid. And what I thought was super interesting and what I didn't realize going in is we were talking about the very broad context of special needs, because we were coming in with a child who was, you know, ADHD and was really hard to raise and sensitivity issues and a lot of things. And then there were other kids that were more obviously special needs, right? You could tell, you know, they maybe had siblings where it was, there was a visual component that you could understand. And I think that in like the context of this podcast, there seems to be a difference between the child that looks like everything should be going smoothly and then the child that doesn't, and how parents and siblings, right, experience that and handle that. So, you know, in the sibling form, it's just, it's so interesting to me because, to your point, they almost become another parent. They take on this role with immense pressure and responsibility, whether it's intentional or not, because everybody's surrounding themselves in most cases around trying to grow and develop this child who is struggling in one way or another to fit into that box. And so I thought that was super interesting when we got in there, because I got a taste of every single, you know, component of those children that were sitting there and had a different appreciation. And it was my aha moment of like, well, yeah, a kid with ADHD is going to be very different than having a child in your house that may have, say, Down syndrome, or I don't know, pick another, you know, disability, if that's what you want to call it. And so anyway, I thought that was super interesting. And, you know, in the context of what you do, the category is so broad.
It really is. And it's so interesting because, you know, the commonalities of the sibling experience often outweigh the differences that some of those disabilities present. And so, you know, if you're talking about a child who maybe uses a wheelchair, right, and who like very visibly has a disability, you know, and what is that experience like for the sibling? Well, some siblings say, well, you know, people can just tell right away, you know, looking at my brother who uses a wheelchair, that, you know, there's something going on. And so, but they might still get stares, you know, in public. They, and people might, you know, ask questions that aren't always like the most appropriate to ask a child, you know, like what's wrong with your, you know, brother, or, and then for some kids who have brothers and sisters that the disability isn't quite so visible, you know, it could be a little bit different. But there always still is that moment of, you know, when is my sibling going to say or do something in public that it's going to click for people that, you know, this is not a typical kid, and I'm still going to get those stares and maybe those comments and maybe those questions that aren't so nice. And so it's a little bit different, but you can see kind of commonalities in those experiences. Same around caregiving, you know, these siblings who become like little parents, right? That is not an uncommon experience. And one of the reasons we emphasize play so much in SIB shops is because we want these kids to come in and first and foremost be kids, you know, and take off their little grown-up hats and remember that these are, you know, these are 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds who still need play and who still need to kind of take the world off their shoulders for a few hours.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, so interesting. My daughter that came to that, she's now away at college and she just left like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And we were talking to her the other night and she said, it's a lot easier being here. I thought it was going to be really like kind of scary and hard and whatever. And she's like, I didn't realize how much responsibility I had around the house and how much pressure, like internal pressure she was feeling. And I was like, yeah, I mean, this is all she knows, right? This world is all she knows. And she's put up with a lot over the years, and this is her first real piece of freedom from the responsibility that has gone on in our house for her whole life. And my husband and I know something different, right? So the parents out there, they grew up somewhere else and had a whole different experience, but these kids, this is their experience, and they may or may not know that it's different somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. This is their baseline. This is their normal. Mm-hmm. Not a big fan of that word, but you know, this is exactly what they know. And so, yeah, I mean, you talk about, you had asked earlier about, you know, what are some common mistakes or missteps that parents make? And I think, you know, one of the things we talk about often is the need for information, that siblings need information about their brothers and sisters' disabilities and diagnoses, just the way parents do, because, you know, they're living it, they're experiencing it. And a lot of times parents don't share that information because they don't want to confuse or upset or burden their other kids, their typically developing kids, their neurotypical kids. But I think what I try to invite parents to think about is that, you know, your other children are experiencing this as well. As you say, it's their baseline, it's their experience. And, you know, if it's an environment where we can't talk about that, you know, that doesn't make it go away, and it doesn't help the child process and understand what's going on, so that they can sort of make sense of it for themselves, and also, you know, to explain to other kids, to peers, which is so important in that school age time in your life when, as I said, like, you know, not only you might not have just strangers asking weird questions in public, but you might have friends and peers asking, you know, what's going on with your brother? What's wrong with your brother? You know, is the same thing wrong with you? Do you have the same thing? And it's really powerful for kids to be able to have the language and the understanding to be able to respond to that. You know, having like autism can be really powerful to say, actually, my brother has autism, or my brother has ADHD, and this is what it means. End of story. Like, that can be really empowering for a child.
How do you support, how would you say you support a kid? Like, in our house, my older son, he actually also has ADHD, but not as severe as my younger son. And he's always trying to step in and make it better. He's trying to be a little parent. And in our worst moments, or not as good moments, I'll say, my husband, I'll be like, stop, you're not the parent. We're the parent. Don't take this on. But he's just always trying to solve it. And I appreciate that, but I'm trying to also let him be the kid and let him know this isn't his job.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that, Rachel. That's really not an uncommon experience that siblings, you know, not only, you know, now we're kind of venturing into, I think guilt is kind of a related topic, which is like, you can't talk about siblings without talking about guilt. It's like talking about the ocean without mentioning water. You know, it's like they just are hand in hand. And so with siblings, you know, there's oftentimes the same way that parents wish they can fix it. You know, siblings might feel guilty because they can't fix it and they really want to. I think a lot of parents can relate to that. And, you know, these little, I always call them these little parents, you know, these siblings who step in, and they're such good helpers and they mean so well. And it can feel really good for a kid to help, you know, to help his or her parents and to help his or her brother or sister. That's a good feeling. But then where's that fine line where it kind of becomes not so good and not so helpful? Because the reality is, like, no one can fix it. And what kind of expectations is that kiddo putting on themselves? And so to say, like, this is not your job, you're not the parent, you know, I think is a good way to start the conversation and to take it to the next level to even say, and by the way, like, we're the parents and even we can't fix it. And what is that like for you? Like, to talk about the feelings underneath the efforts, I think that can be really, really helpful for parents and siblings.
That's great. I like that.
I also think that sibling needs, probably in these conversations, there's a line where it would be great to have like an outside resource or like a therapy or one of these, you know, one of your panels or your sip shops to really get into how it makes them feel, but also what their role in that household is and how they they are an independent person there too, and that it's okay to be scared sometimes, and it's okay to feel shame from it, and it's okay to feel that guilt, and that they need to learn how to let go, because yeah. in a lot of cases they're going to become that, you know, they're going to feel that like people pleasing, it develops as people pleasing, and depending on their role in the family, and it gets super complicated. And I know that, at least for our family, having everybody have their own flavor of therapy over the years, whether it was a big deal or a couple sessions, just to have that outside resource be the person, whatever that network is that you can use to validate your feelings and to say it's totally okay. I think one of the things we struggled with a lot was the exhaustion that our house went through with a lot of the trauma and just the effort it took for school, and the everything was effort, right? So everything was just harder. And so that is exhausting. And I know that for at least my daughter, I'll keep using as an example, but she, you know, some friends didn't understand. And they were just like, well, I don't understand. Just tell them you're going to go. And she's like, you don't understand. When this happens, we just can't go. And I'm okay with that. And I need you to be okay with that and understand. And some people are understanding in those scenarios and some people aren't, but to get back to that kid, to have them understand inside of them, this is kind of, this is the place I'm in right now. And these are my feelings, and they're fine. They're okay. And they don't have to take them on with their family.
Right. And to acknowledge, you know, I mean, first of all, like what a great lesson in advocacy for your daughter, right? To be able to advocate with friends and say like, no, this is just our reality. Also, you know, siblings tend to be really good at finding folks. The people we let into our inner circles are typically people who share the same values that we do. And I think siblings tend to be a little bit maybe more careful about that. We oftentimes use our brothers and sisters as a litmus test, you know, like the way you respond to my sibling is going to tell me a lot about whether or not I want to keep you around for the long term. And also, you know, we do a lot of lectures and trainings and workshops. And I always say, you know, if you remember nothing else I say, like, the most important thing to remember for parents, for professionals, for anyone who wants to support a sibling, is that siblings want to be heard and validated. It's really not much more complicated than that. I mean, siblings want to be able to share their thoughts, share their feelings, share their fears, share their goals. You know, we talk about future planning and how important that is for families living with disability, and how siblings really need to be part of that conversation, because guess what? We are our siblings' contemporaries, and we, at the end of the day, typically are the folks who step in later in life to help support our brothers and sisters. And so it's very important for siblings to be able to talk with parents and the person with the disability to talk about future planning and to say, like, this is what I'm willing to take on. This is what I maybe we'll take on, but I'm not sure I can. I don't know if I have the skills or the knowledge or the resources. This is what I need help with. This is what I absolutely will not take on and will not do. You know, siblings really need to be heard. And then Christy, you really said it, validation. Validation is so important. And for siblings of all ages to hear, yeah, it's okay if you are resentful, angry, guilty, embarrassed, you know, whatever the feeling is, all those hard feelings that is really hard for us to talk about in general, in society, especially difficult for siblings who oftentimes, you know, like perceive that the parents have a lot on their plates, right? And we don't want to add to that perceived burden. And so we're going to be the perfect kid, and we're not going to bring home any problems. We're going to try to, you know, to almost be enough for two kids in some cases, right? To talk about that.
I've seen how they try to overachieve mm-hmm. to be this other person for their family, and that has its own issues.
For sure. And our house siblings, that just that validation that, you know what, it's okay to feel not so great sometimes. In fact, it's kind of part of being a human being. I would not expect anything different. And it's okay to fail, and it's okay to mess up. We're still going to love you and value you, and you're going to be able to keep putting one foot in front of the other the way we do as parents every day. It's just really, really important messages for siblings to hear.
I'd be interested also to hear what you'd have to say about, I know one of the things that we struggle with here a lot, and I'm sure other people would, is how do you make each one of those children in this household feel like they're getting your time in an equal way? And I felt like, you know, we have three very different kids who have three very different needs. And so I constantly felt like I was explaining to them how I was, or my husband and I were, offering value to their world because it was looking very different from everyone else's. So I would constantly be like, well, no, your brother gets me because he needs blah, blah, blah. And this is how I'm offering him my time. But you get shopping or lunches or walks in the country. Or remember, we took that special trip, like yours, I can give you different time, you know, in a different way. But I look at it as like, that's kind of my equal. If there's something different that you need from me, please let me know. But your equal and his equal look very different.
Yeah. And that's kind of the definition of equity, right? It's not acknowledging that, you know, people are starting from different places and, you know, providing the same thing to each person to help make things equal. It's really about meeting each person where they're at, you know, and ultimately really tailoring, you know, to them what they need. And so, you know, I think the first thing that parents sort of can free themselves of is this idea that like there is such thing as fairness, right? And I keep referring to myself, I didn't say in my intro, you know, my biggest qualification for this job as director of the Sibling Support Project is that I'm a sibling. You know, I have an older brother who, he's 2 years older, he has an intellectual disability, and he's just, you know, he's really at the center of many of my personal and professional decisions, and I, you know, I'm grateful to him for that. And I've lived it. And so I can say that one of the most important things and the most powerful, helpful things that my mother ever said to me was, I think I was having some kind of meltdown and I was saying as a child, it's just not fair. And she said, you know what, Emily, you're right. It's not fair. The world is not fair. I wish it was, but it's not. And so we need to do the best we can with what we've got to make things easier for each other. And I understand your feelings, and I know it really stinks. It stinks for me too, but we need to do the best we can. And that, you know, for me, moving forward, I think that was a really important lesson. And, you know, the good news with siblings, parents contact us all the time, and they're so worried about this fairness issue. So there are a couple of concrete things that parents can do. First and foremost, Rachel and I were talking about this earlier, you know, siblings, a great cause of resentment is when there are unequal expectations around the house. So for things like chores and behaviors and consequences, and if the child with a disability is able to sort of indulge and able to kind of get away with behavior that other children in the house are not, you know, they're punished for, that's going to cause a lot of resentment. And so siblings who tell us they fared well in this department say that their parents, you know, really try to the greatest extent possible, set equal expectations. So like, it's not okay for, you know, any of us to, you know, hit each other or call each other names. Like that's just not, disability or none, like we're gonna treat each other with respect, like a basic level of respect. Also, you know, everybody is expected to do a little something around the house, and maybe it's not equal, right? Maybe like we're not doing the same chores, but the expectation is the same, that we're all doing something around the house. And in terms of the time and attention piece, the really good news for all of us busy parents who, like, none of us have enough hours in the day ever, the good news is that for siblings, a little goes a long way. And it's those small, consistent gestures that siblings remember and cherish. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, the big vacations or the time that we took a big trip together or, you know, the time that my parents, you know, whatever it is, whatever big gesture, what counts more with siblings is those little moments. And we have siblings who talk to us about, yeah, my mom and I would take my brother to therapy 2 times a week. And for 50 minutes, we would sit in the car and wait for him. And we would talk or listen to a podcast or just laugh and sing, you know, whatever, listen to the radio. And that was like this sibling's most cherished memory of spending time with her mom in a car, you know? So it's those little consistent, another sibling told us recently, my parents, when growing up, this was an adult sibling looking back, my parents would let me stay up 20 extra minutes every night after they put my sister to bed. And it was just our time. And we could do a puzzle or talk about our day or maybe watch part of a show. Whatever it was that 20 minutes I had with them that was just so special to me. So it's just carving out those little moments.
This is so, such great information right now. Cause I'm thinking like in my household growing up, when I look back at the times with my mom, like she did spend that time with me. Like I had one big family, one brother who definitely took up a lot of the energy in the room. And it's so true. And I think with my son that needs that more time, he's always staying up at night. And I think that he wants that calm time with us. And I think listening to you, I'm like, I need to make more of an effort to really give that to him and appreciate it, even when I'm tired.
Yeah. Or maybe even just to acknowledge it. I mean, it might be things that you're already doing that, you know, you feel like, oh, this doesn't count because we're not like doing something like elaborate together. We're not like going somewhere or like having an experience together. But it's those times that are so important. It's just showing up, you know, and being present. I'll tell you guys, growing up for me, it was once a week. It was every Friday in the car with my mom, 15 minutes to pick up dinner and 15 minutes home. It was 30 minutes a week. And it was my favorite 30 minutes of every week because we could, again, we could talk about what was happening at school or, you know, we could just listen to the radio. It didn't matter. It was just me and my mom. And it was such a
your me time, right? Time. Just looking for your me time. I felt like when my daughter started to drive, that's when it became more complicated and we had to really carve things out. But up until then it was always in the car. It was always, to your point, like in the car. It was waiting for her tennis match to start or, you know, dropping her off at school and we'd get there 15 minutes early and just sit there. You know, just hang.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, another tip to share with parents is especially for those little parents, like the siblings who are like the little parents or the little helpers, you know, that can be so complicated because again, there's so much good that comes from helping. And you know, you also don't want that child's whole identity to be wrapped up in the fact that they're a helper and that they're their sibling's helper, right? So how do you navigate that? And I think one very simple way is to just keep those lines of communication open and to be able to say to a child, you know, you do such an amazing job helping your brother or sister. What's that like for you? You know, tell me about that. How is that for you? And just leave it open-ended, you know, because I think sometimes we just make so many assumptions as parents. And so we become afraid to start those conversations because maybe we're afraid of what we're going to hear. But it's a really nice chance for a kiddo to kind of take a step back and think, oh, well, what is this like for me? And, you know, the good, the bad, and the in-between, it just kind of leaves that door open. I think it's important for siblings to have opportunities to just talk and kind of explore their own feelings about things.
Yeah, no, those are really great points. I mean, I think it's so helpful. And I think, you know, you made a point about asking as a parent, you know, what it's like for them. And I think that you don't always, as a parent, even have to have an answer to that. You don't necessarily have to have a response. I know a lot of times, like, at least for us, sometimes my husband will be like, how would I solve that? I'm like, you're not there to solve it. You're there just to listen. You're there just to keep your ears open. And I know another thing that has happened in our house is becoming very reliant on that sibling that we know is going to be the easiest out of the bunch. So it's like, can you please do this? Can you please do that? I'm in a bind. We're in a hurry. We're running at this pace. Can you please? And taking that step back and realizing that just because it's easier you don't continue to go to that person. You do have to distribute the expectations around to all three of them and find different ways to do that. Cause it is easy to reach out to that one child or two children and say, you know, I need your help. I need your help. This is so crazy. And that does damage.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's so valuable to be able to step back from that in that moment when you are catching your breath and it's not crazy to take a step back and to say like, all right, that was crazy. What was that like for you? You know, or, you know, tell me in that moment, you know, what were you thinking and feeling? And I'll tell you what I was thinking and feeling, and what can we do differently next time? Like, what would make it better next time? What do you think we should do? And again, it's not problem solving, you know, like your example with your husband, it's not, this is the beauty of active listening. And when I say like siblings want to be heard, they don't necessarily want you to solve their problems. They just want you to hear and validate them. And, you know, we do a lot with active listening in our trainings, and we always recommend the book, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. Mm-hmm. You know, you can find, it's a New York Times bestseller. You can find it on Amazon. Now they have like versions for teenagers and younger kids and different languages. But it's really, you know, if you haven't had like a training in active listening, it's kind of a good crash course. It's super accessible reading. And it makes that exact point that, you know, the goal is not necessarily to solve the problem. It's to hear the child out, you know, and to let the child know that what they're telling you is important, you know, to give them verbal and nonverbal cues, to let them know you're present, you're with them. This is important to me. And to acknowledge like, yeah, that is really hard.
Yeah, it is. It is very hard. So talk about, I guess, the SIB shops more.
Yeah. So we started SIB shops almost 40 years ago. Don Meyer is our founder and the creator of SIB shops. And again, SIB shops are workshops for school age brothers and sisters of kids with special needs, opportunities for kids to play. We do a lot of fun activities to play, to learn something about their brothers and sisters' disabilities and maybe the services they're receiving, because again, that need for information is so important. And then to talk about the ups and downs of having a sibling with special needs with other people who actually get it for once, because they're living the same, you know, walking the same path. And so there are more than 550 SIB shops across the United States and around the world. They exist in pretty much any place you can think of that kids exist: schools, parks and rec departments, disability service providers, early intervention centers, churches, synagogues, like really any place in the community that interfaces with families and kids and disability is the place that you might find a SIB shop. Our role is that we train organizations around the world on how to run SIB shops. And so once someone completes the training, they can go out into their local community and start their SIB shop. And there's a lot of flexibility with the model, which I think is the reason it's been so successful in so many diverse settings. They exist in about 20 countries outside of the US, in just as many languages. And I think that, again, one reason that they've been so successful around the world is that they really center around two universal languages. And one is shared experience. So what is it like to have a sibling who's quote unquote different, right? And what's that like in our family and out in the world? And then the first language that all of us learn really, which is play. It's how we kind of learn about ourselves in the world. And again, you know, we emphasize play a lot in SIB shops, because when Don was first researching sibling support models back in the late 1970s and early 1980s, what he read about could kind of be described as like a circle of folding chairs with little siblings sitting in them with like a therapist and a box of tissues. And that didn't really resonate for the 11-year-old and Don. Like, he didn't think he'd give up a perfectly good Saturday to attend one of those. And so he really wanted to create a model that emphasized play and fun, and that kids would want to keep coming back to. And once they're having fun and connecting with other kids, it's amazing how willing they are to share and to help each other problem solve. That's a big part of SIB shops, that the kids are really the experts in the room, and they're giving each other advice on how to handle sticky situations that siblings might find themselves in.
So how do people find out about SIB shops in their community?
So if they come to our website, which is siblingsupport.org, we have a directory of registered SIB shops. People can search by state or country. And we just redid our website. So I would say about maybe half of those SIB shops have re-registered on our new website, and we're working on getting the other ones re-registered. They can always contact us at info@siblingsupport.org. If they're looking for services in their community, we can do our best to help them find those if they're not listed on our website. But that's really, the website is the best way, and they can always reach out to us if they're interested in maybe starting a SIB shop in their area or learning more about siblings and sibling issues, the way you guys, you know, had us come out for a sibling panel to do a little sibling overview and a sibling panel, which was, I think you'll agree, that sibling panel is such a powerful experience for parents, and I mean really everyone in the community, to kind of hear from the real experts as they reflect upon their experience. And that, of course, is siblings themselves.
Yeah, I mean, at that panel that we had here, again, it was eye-opening to me to think about the diversity within even this group, right? But then there were so many parents that were there and people, and it wasn't that it was a huge group, but it was hitting everybody on a different nerve. So there was a lot of emotion and tears. And I met, you know, two other people who have children in the community that they work with, you know, for different, even different reasons, but there's this, now we have like this little common viewpoint. Like, I know who those people are that were there, and it does make you feel better. And it is validating for you, because you do feel, as a parent, as a sibling, and probably even as, like, I can even speak for my kids, like, we all have our own loneliness with it. And that's real. That's real for the kid in the experience, who knows that something's, you know, not quite like maybe what they perceive normal to be. And that has its own definition and emotion. And then the siblings of those kids and the parents, you know, you go through a very unusual and uncomfortable and lonely journey with this. And knowing that there are places and other people is hard to find sometimes, especially when you're kind of like, do you have one of these? Like, can we talk about what's happened with you? And having those mentors in that peer group is so important.
So important. Yeah. I mean, we would never think of asking parents to walk this journey alone, right? I mean, just the value in connecting with other parents is tremendous. Not only in sharing those resources and that information, but saying, gosh, this is, you know, lonely, or this is the challenge today. And just being able to share that with someone who gets what you're talking about and who can, you know, validate it and, you know, make you feel not quite so alone. It's so important. And the same is true of siblings. And we find that in our groups, our online groups, we find that in our SIB shops. It's just the power of connection is real. And I think there's so much value in being able to share our experiences with others who are walking a similar path.
Yeah, no, it is important. And I feel like now I have a whole different perspective, even when I go in public places and I see these parents with little kids, and you can tell the little kids throwing a fit or doing whatever. And I'm like, oh, bless you. I hope this is going to end, but man, I know where that's headed.
That just happened last week. I saw a guy with a 2-year-old girl, and I could see it. I could see his exhaustion. And I'm like, I've got one of those. He's 8. And I hate to tell you, it's the path. But they're the most wonderful kids in the world sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, there really are those bright spots, you know? And I mean, for siblings too, as much as we talk about the challenges, there really are so many opportunities and so many rewards that siblings talk about, you know? And it's not, I think that's another misconception, that people think like, oh gosh, you know, siblings, like, it's all just so terrible and hard for them. Or, you know, you have the other extreme. You have even, you know, siblings who say, oh gosh, like, I'm so much more patient and tolerant, and I found my dream career in a helping profession all because of my sibling. You know, it's not all one or all the other. Like, it really is all of the above. I mean, same as parents, you know, you have those nightmare moments, Rachel, like you saw with that dad, right? But then you also have like these amazing, light, loving moments where you just kind of are able to reflect on and really appreciate, you know, this unique human being and this relationship that you have. And I think maybe we have a different level of insight on that, because, you know, maybe we have those challenges maybe more than other people. Or so then when we have these amazing moments, we appreciate them so much more. And that's really true of siblings too. And young siblings who talk about, oh, I'm so proud, you know, that my brother learned how to tie his shoes. And
I can't believe you meant you used that as the example. We had to send our children to Nordstrom to learn how, because we gave up. And apparently yeah. they had a shoe tying clinic, or they used to.
Well, that's a big deal, you know, and if your sibling is 13 and just learning how to tie his shoes, you can't really tell your friends that, like, oh, I'm so happy he's, but you know, we see it in our SIB teen group, and you know, these teens just being so proud of the accomplishments, large and small, of their brothers and sisters, and adult siblings saying, like, you know, my sister is my biggest fan. When I come home from college, when I come home to visit, she's always at the door, so excited to see me. And she throws her arms around me and says, Sissy, I'm so glad to see you. You know, like those moments that siblings have with their brothers and sisters, those are magic.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, we've definitely experienced both sides of the equation. We've had a lot of, you know, you've ruined every one of my birthdays. You've thrown a fit and cried. It was about you. You know, I got stranded on that birthday kind of thing all the way through. My siblings are the reason I got into college. My essay was my essay, and my passion for what I'm doing has everything to do with the experience I had growing up in my house. And so, you know, and you have to appreciate those. I think of them as like the electric moments. And I always feel sad, like, that my extended family doesn't, you know, they've been around for some of the worst moments, and they don't always see some of the bright moments, and that there's so many bright moments too. It's just that the emotion drags you down on the harder moments.
And we tend to remember those more, right? It's like, we always remember the negative. It's like, you know, you do anything, and you give a speech, or you run a meeting, or whatever it is, and you remember the two mistakes you made, 200 things that you did great, you know? So it's like human nature, you tend to remember the negative. But I think, you know, a silver lining is if we can just try to remember those electric moments. And I think we have a lot of opportunities as family members of people with disabilities to do that.
Yeah, totally. Well, I know you have to run, right? You have another meeting to come up on, but thank you so much. I love talking to you the first time, and the information. Obviously, you have tons of experience in this department.
A lifetime of experience, yes. And then, you know, some professional experience too.
It sounds like a lot of training.
Yeah, a lot of training, and a lot of great connections within the sibling community. So there's so much to learn always. And it's just, honestly, it's an honor to do this work and to talk with folks like you who, you know, make time and space for siblings to shine. And, you know, we appreciate that so much. So thanks for having me.
Thank you.
No, that's great. Well, thank you so much for listening to Rachel and I today. We really appreciate it. If you'd like to follow us on Facebook, you can find us at Constant Chaos. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at Podcast Chaos.